Hello and welcome to Learning Rewired, the podcast brought to you by Headspring. If you don't know Headspring, Headspring is the learning and development arm of IE Business School in partnership with the Financial Times. And here today, I have a very special guest, Professor Mark Fritz, who is a leadership specialist, associate professor at both Headspring and IE Business School, and an expert who delivered leadership sessions all over the world in more than 50 countries, has been working with international teams for many, many years. So I'm sure he has a lot of stories to tell. Reminder, I'm Thiago Kivi, your host here, you know, head of marketing here at Headspring. And this is a podcast for HR leaders, for L&D leaders, for talent leaders, anybody who cares about the future of work and where people and development are involved. So, Mark, thanks very much for coming here today. It's a windy, cold day in London. So thanks very much for coming here at the Financial Times.
Pleasure to be here.
Mark, I mean, on the topic of leadership, there's many, many things that we can talk about. Today, we decided to concentrate our conversation on one topic, which is context, right? So why? Why is context important when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, it's really interesting because in today's world, it's so complex, you know, so uncertain. And if you think about, you know, where we were in the past, we didn't have communications capability we have today, the digitalization. And now when you add AI in, the options, the choices are just unbelievable. So if you don't frame a good context, you don't align people, you don't get things moving faster, you don't create the future faster than others. Because everybody will come up with good things to do, but you have to think about where you're heading, where you want to go, and the why behind it to really get people to be able to come up with their own key ideas within that and keep going forward. And so I think context is key. It's key. Very, very key.
Do you normally see people or teams or leaders struggling to understand the direction the business is going, understanding the context, and then therefore not finding meaning in the work? So is that what you're trying to say? That
meaning is part of it, because you get people to use their potential when it has meaning. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they can't make the right choices, right? So if they don't know exactly where we're going and so forth, they sometimes take the easier choice. Think about it. If you have five options you have, or you have five things you have to do before the end of the day, you know, if you're really looking at, sometimes you go, oh, I'll do the easy ones and then I'll do the hard one tomorrow morning when I'm really clear or something like that. So we tend to do the easy when we have too many choices. And today's world requires critical thinking and everything. You have to really lay out all the different options and you have to lay out the road ahead. The interesting thing, when I was leading, you have to lay the road ahead, but you have to lay the road ahead in different mile markers, mm-hmm. right? You have some of your people who can only see the first mile. They can't see very far. They're junior, or they're just, their mindset's not there. And some of the people can see way down the road. Well, if you don't explain the direction in all the different mile markers that are consistent for people, people can't see meaning for how they're aligned or make better choices on their day-to-day. Mm-hmm. This is more aligned on where we're going. That's not more aligned.
Yeah, this reminds me a lot of a chapter, I don't remember the chapter, but on Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits, where he does the analogy where you have someone cutting the trees, chopping the trees, and someone standing on the top of the trees, right?
Yeah.
And and sometimes you might be trying to chop and open a path, but the direction is completely wrong. So is that what you're trying to the point that you're trying to make, that essentially it's about vision?
It's about really why and where. It's about vision. Mm. There's a guy in America, Andy Stanley, who came up with a great definition of a vision. It's a mental picture of what could be fueled by the conviction of what should be, right? In today's world, you have to narrow down the could be because there's just so many options. Yeah. I really found that the best leaders, they're really good and I say great about making one choice. They can choose between good and great. Everybody can choose between bad and good. You do the good. But today's world, there's too much good. Mm-hmm. You can't do all the good things. You have to choose the great from the good. And the only way to say what's great or what's good is this is creating the future faster than this is than this one. So it's kind of like where and why. So without a where and why, you organizations tend to do too many good things, but might not be getting them fast enough for where they really want to go. It's because their leaders can't frame the context powerful enough for their people to make their own choices. So if I can't make a choice on what's good or bad, I have to go to my boss and say, what's the best one to do? Mm-hmm. Or between great and good, which one should I do? Mm-hmm. So I think context is key. Context drives the content you use. And the analogy I use now is that there's just immense opportunities about what content or how you do the role and what you do. And so forth. Take Chat GPT, you know, when you put in a script, that's context. You don't write the script well, you don't get the right thing out. It's the same in business now. If you're not framing it right, you're not getting the right focus, attention from your people on those things. And I just think we're in a world where there's always options. There's no perfect answer anymore. There's only options, and the best way to make a choice on what's the best option, from my respect, is does this one create the future faster or not, in terms of where we're going, because that's the ultimate choice. So that's why I say context is important. Says why, where, in such a way that people can see how they're contributing to it, and then they're going to use their potential.
Mm-hmm. And what usually stops people from creating that context?
Their head is down. Right? If you're needed to run the place, you're not going to look ahead as to where we're driving and where we're going. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, too many people are too far into the organization. And they do that because they want to feel needed and everything.
So is it an organizational issue then when it comes to creating the context? Basically, the context is not passing down from the CEO to his next level or their next level. And then, therefore, only half of it is almost like Chinese whispers. Does it become...
It's part of it is you have to be communicating in a way that people can carry it forward and through the organization. They always say the middle managers are the interpreters of the business. They interpret what the boss wants, and then... Mm-hmm. You hope it gets down there and everything. So that's key. But I think the majority of the issue is that people don't see their role as context provider. They see their role as making sure everything gets done properly. They're like a manager, not a leader in providing that. And I've worked with different CEO and mentoring groups for small business owners and things. And I did some sessions, about 15, on letting go. And I started each session by asking them all the reasons why they don't let go, why they don't raise up and think more of the where and why, and they're too much into the how. And always, 85 to 90% had nothing to do with the quality of their people. Yeah. It had only to do with their own thinking, insecurities, and everything. What they need to feel in control, to feel needed, to get their own buzz. You have to get involved in your own buzz, etc.
Mm. When you talk about not letting go, do you mean delegating?
Yes, exactly. Mm. And not just delegating activity, because you delegate an activity, you still keep the ownership of the outcome. You have to delegate outcomes and the decisions associated with that. So I really feel that the leaders who can let go, they have time to, you know, paint the vision and drive forward and so forth. Mm. And they're focused on that. And they're focused on laying the road ahead so their people can really drive fast. If the road ahead is not clear, your people can't drive fast.
Mm-hmm. And what is the best way of kind of letting go of delegating in a way that you still keep track of things, you know.
Yeah.
I know you have a model, the I think NIFO model. Or
that you I have nose in, fingers out, yeah. which yeah. is really about asking questions and if you have to give the answer using stories and examples.
Mm.
But the best way I knew how to do it when I was leading, because you know I was leading one time, I had people in 25 countries, I had direct reports in 9 countries, and I found is you get them very clear on what you want them to achieve. And then you ask them for the steps or the milestones to achieve it. So if they give you very good answers to the steps, you know they know what they're doing. If they give you a little bit poor answers to those steps, then you need to manage them a little bit tighter. But I found if I ask them for the milestones, then I can hold them accountable for those milestones. And they're going to take a lot more responsibility because it's theirs. So my discussion with my people was not about activities and completing activities. My discussion with my people was about hitting milestones and achieving those outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what I call is when you're talking about milestones and outcomes or progress and achievement, you're talking in the language of achievement. You know, when you're talking in activities, you're talking in a language of business. Just getting an activity done doesn't mean that we're making the right progress towards achieving the outcome. Mm-hmm. And so I really coach leaders to say, you know, at what level are you having your conversations with your people?
Mm-hmm.
Is it in progress and achievement or is it in activities? Because, you know, the minute you get into the activities, and here's the other problem. If a leader really loves the business, the minute you start talking about activities, they really go deeper. Because they love the discussion. I love the business and things like that. So you really have to be careful. You know, the goal is not for you to be the answer. The goal is for your people to be the answer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, on my day-to-day, of course, I'm not the exemplary leader, but certainly I see some of these challenges. And there are many projects that or tasks or activities which I feel that I can contribute a lot, you know. And sometimes I do feel that it's a skill that for me is easy to do. I'll get it done much easier, super quickly. But as you said, it's about letting go, right? You know,
yeah.
It's your responsibility now as a leader. It's not this. It's not delivering on this task. It's ensuring that your team is delivering on that task, and then you can look at something else.
Exactly. Exactly. Marshall Goldsmith said it best years ago. He says, you know, there's two weaknesses in leaders. One, they don't listen, right? And if someone doesn't listen to you, you don't feel valued, right? And if you're not listening, it's not theirs. But the second one was very interesting. He says the best leaders, they still have this weakness of adding too much value. You know, you're contributing.
Yeah.
Now, you know, that's fine if no one else could do it. But, you know, 90%, 95%, someone in your team can actually do it. It's just that you need to maybe coach them through it, ask a few questions, guide them a little bit the first time, whatever, but they can do it. And it's a matter of leadership is that we feel lonely, right? We're not involved in much and so forth. And so I found, for us, the best way for us to get involved is by ask better questions. You know, ask quality questions. Ask, how are you doing this? Oh, you know, why did you choose that way versus the other way? You know, and you know, because the questions get you involved. You can maybe, and if you have to give an insight, don't tell them. Use a story or an example, analogy. Because psychologically, people do not feel directly told with a story or an example. It's an indirect tell. So they don't feel that you've been told, but also it's much more memorable, it's much more relatable, etc. That's why NIFO. Nose in, ask better questions. Fingers out, okay, if I have to give guidance and help, I use a story or an example. And that's really where I found the power. And I think if you're buried down in the details, you can't see the road ahead, or you can't communicate the road ahead well enough for your best people. All right. So actually, the biggest thing I found is micromanagers aren't utilizing their best people and their potential. They can run a lot faster if you give them the freedom that way. But if you're always managing people to the lowest common denominator of trusting, right? So some leaders have a 0 or 100% trust. You have to learn to put boundaries around where you don't trust. So if you only trust someone 70%, you let go 70 and you put boundaries around to make sure you've covered the other part. And most time we're just so in a hurry. Okay, I don't have time to put the boundaries. I'll do it myself.
That's precisely how I feel sometimes, but also I'm sure I'm not the only one. I wanted to ask you on a point of context. Obviously, as we said, you know, sometimes this is an organizational issue, and perhaps the middle manager, the head of department, sometimes the information already got to them, already perhaps not very clear. The context of a project or of a big new mission or whatever, it's not necessarily very clear to that person either. And then that person has the role or the job of, okay, delegating, passing on to the team. When you're in that position, when you don't have the full context yet, but you need to pass on to your team to ensure that they have the right context, ensuring that they do the best they can, What is the best way forward? You know, is it going back to the top and asking more questions, or what advice would you give?
Sometimes you have to ask questions of the boss, and it's not, you don't ask questions to get a black and white answer necessarily all the time. You ask some questions to get some more insights behind the why. But a lot of times we give the excuse that we don't have a clear, so we can't give clarity. You can't use that, because as a leader, we have to get comfortable with ambiguity, because it's our job as a leader to take an uncertain world and make it clear enough for our people to take action. So it doesn't have to be totally clear. It just has to be clear enough so they can see action to take without always running to you. So enough clarity means so that they can take action, they can make decisions on those things. And there's an old saying, is that there's a couple of things. We rise to the level of ambiguity we can handle. I mean, a CEO's job is totally ambiguous, right? Yeah, it's totally uncertain. You know, they have to help set a direction and those things. And we also rise to the level of conflict we can handle. But I think a lot of times middle managers use the excuse of, I'm not being told clear. Well, you won't be totally clear all the time, especially in a fast world, but you have to take what the key things out of that and say, how do I make it clear enough for my people to take some action?
And how do you find time for this? Because obviously, everybody's running, you know. Yeah. Some are running faster than others, but in general, people are kind of overwhelmed with work or.
Yeah,
you know, they have a lot on their plate. How can you, as a leader, start finding time or finding the space to, okay, now it's time to give context. Now, in my next conversation,
I give you two ideas, and some is my own experience, and somehow I learned from working with very good leaders. I mean, there's two things I used to do, and I learned this along the way. One is reflection and think ahead time. Because reflection, best definition of reflection I ever heard, it's the opportunity to give yourself advice. So if you're not reflecting, where are we and what do we need to do and think ahead, you're not in the driver's seat of your week, your day and your week. You're being driven around by everybody else. So if you're not clear on what you're doing, some people sometimes say, oh, how do I know what I'm doing? How do you know what you're doing? And they say to me, oh, I look at my inbox. Well, your inbox is not your priorities. It's everybody else's. So you need to reflect and think ahead. And you need to really think about, you know, what is the priorities, you know, just not for me and for my organization. I think Jeff Bezos went out, I think every 6 months when he was leading Amazon by himself, was reflecting and thinking ahead for a day and a half. It took a weekend or something like that. The second thing is I always looked at the vision or the direction, kind of like I needed to plant a dominant thought, right? I need to plant and water a dominant thought in my people's mind. And Andy Stanley said it best about this vision. A most powerful vision is not complete. It's memorable. It's more important for you memorable than complete. So what I was always looking at is, what is it that I need to plant in my people's minds and keep coming back and watering it so it's strong enough to drive their daily and weekly actions? And I'll give you an example. You know, I ask people in my trainings, I say, what percentage of what you do every day is driven by your conscious mind? And sometimes I get some crazy answers, like 50, 60%. But it's really only 2 to 4%. Mm. And I'll prove it to you with one question. Can you tell me your next thought? You can't. It just pops up.
Yeah.
So I found that, you know, the very best leaders, when they frame the context, if it reaches people's subconscious mind, you repeat it, you refer to it, you describe it in different ways, it becomes a dominant thought, they see more ways to go make it happen. I always share this with parents. Parents, I say, okay, think back when you had your first child. In the middle of the pregnancy of the first child, when you went around the city, did you and your partner see more baby buggies? Mm. They all go, yes. I go, did you go to your partner at breakfast and coffee and say, honey, let's go look for baby buggies today? No, it's a dominant thought, unbelievable emotion, your brain pointed it out. Mm-hmm. So a context is very powerful when it becomes a dominant thought. If this is where we're going, and it's very clear this is where we're going, they're going to make faster choices, yes or no, on the options they have. Mm-hmm. And so I always looked at it towards the end of my career as I'm planting and watering dominant thoughts. And that's the context. That's the vision, the direction, or the most important for this particular area that is, quote, their North Star. Where are we heading? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So find space for reflection.
And think ahead.
And think ahead.
You think ahead. Because the think ahead part, the reflection confirms your focus. You're going to focus more. The think ahead is how you're going to apply your focus. But a great reflection question I'm starting to use recently, and because just reconfirming it in my mind, is you can ask yourself, did I spend my week in the passenger seat or the driver's seat? Were you driven around more? Or were you more in charge of what you were trying to accomplish and what you were trying to do? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, if you're just so passive about just, you're not really focused, you're not reflecting and thinking ahead, you're not in the driver's seat. You're being driven around by those requests by everybody else. You're not in the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. So I'd ask you, you say, like, think back, you know, last week. If you reflect on last week, were you more in the passenger seat of your role or the driver's seat of your role? Mm. And I found that people who are focused on framing the context, enabling their people to take more action and decisions without them, they're more in the driver's seat. Mm. And it's a different feeling coming to the end of your week when you spend more time in the driver's seat than the passenger seat. Now, in large organizations, you're always going to spend the time in both,
yeah,
especially if you're a middle manager. Mm-hmm. But definitely the driver's seat has to be, the feeling of being in the driver's seat has to be more than the feeling of being in the passenger seat.
Yeah, and I think there's a challenge there, which is basically understanding and being able to step back a little bit to understand precisely whether you are on the driver's seat or whether you're in the passenger seat, right? Because for some people, I'm sure many, many people don't really even think about this, yeah, right? They come to the end of the week, oh, I've done this, I've done that, I've done that, I've done that. And, someone asked me, oh, great, received an email, oh, well done, Thiago, you're a star, you know, thank you very much, a lot of thanks from everybody else, but how about you? Yeah. You know, and I guess the question to me, the question that comes to mind is how do you start categorizing, or how do you start understanding, you know, what you say no to, what to embrace as an important project, how to be more selective, and at what point how to create also boundaries to say, okay, guys, yeah, this is, I know this is really important, but I cannot concentrate on this right now because I have other things. So what advice do you have, and like, what, any interesting examples of good leaders who can do this well?
Well, I think, you know, it's having more of a where and what or outcome focus. You know, there's, as a leader, your job shouldn't be so much on the how, right? The how, yeah, in terms of the behaviors, the key behaviors, the foundational behaviors that make the company work well. But the other how, the, your people should come up with the how. And so as leaders, we're more about what is it we need to achieve? What are the key things our organization needs to achieve? And where are we going? And always keep that in front of us. And when something new comes in, is it more important than what I've already thought was important or not? Right? And so you, if you're doing a reflection and you think ahead, when something new comes in, it's very easy to make a quicker decision because you're up to, you reinforcing. Every week you're looking at your priorities. Every week it's totally clear. But if you never do that and something new comes in, and it's not so easy to make those yes-no decisions. But, you know, you're clearly, you're not focused unless you're saying no. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And for that, you need to have a plan, right? And, a plan is key because what I normally tell my team is if you don't have a plan, it's just too easy just to jump onto the next thing that the person next to you comes to you with, you know, so, or you just get distracted. So having a plan, even if it's a bad plan or a plan that
pulling you forward.
Not perfect, but at least it's something that you can stick to.
Yeah.
And okay, you know, yeah, we're moving forward. I'm stuck to this, and I'm committed to this project.
Yeah, and the plan is always the importance of a plan, especially when you're leading people, is there has to be those steps and a date next to those steps. So it's not like I didn't ever wanted a 2-page, 3-page plan. I just want, okay, give me the 6 or 7 key milestones to achieve this. Mm-hmm. And one time in my career, I had major projects, and I said, I'll pay you a bonus if you achieve that project, but I'll subtract from the bonus if you miss any milestones. Because things are connected, right? Mm-hmm. In your team as well. Sometimes if people are a little behind on their project, it hurts something on another project too. So I always try to break it down to something that's achievable, and also a date next to it. Mm-hmm. Because a date creates a sense of urgency. Without a date, you don't have a sense of urgency.
Absolutely.
And you always feel that, oh, yeah, I can push it further. Yeah. And, you know, it's like the hockey stick where you all the activity at the end. So I think that's key. But it's really important to come back to that, you know, reflection and think ahead time. You know, you really, without it, there's that tendency to just be more reactive than proactive, and to accept and say yes more, because when you think and you reflect and think ahead, you're so strong then on how your focus is and why it's there. When something comes in and takes you off the rails and isn't important, you respond quicker and say, no, this I can't do because of these, and these. Or, no, I cannot do this week, but I can do this week, that next week. Or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I had no problem with a person coming to me when they're saying, no, I can't do it right away. Mm-hmm. The people that were delivering and everything, because I knew they were making the right choices. And everything. Mm-hmm. It's the people who aren't delivering that I would, okay, it's just trying to give me excuse.
Mm. How about decision making? What role does, you know, the whole idea of creating context, how can they help leaders and people and teams make quicker decisions?
Yeah, because if they know where we're going and why, and they kind of, they know the next few steps too, is because you laid out, they can say, well, this helps us go forward faster, or this might be a problem. So they might see some issues faster, and they make decisions according to that. But, you know, it's like almost anything. I thought this was really good. It sounds funny, but it's very good. It says, you know, we don't really make good decisions. Mm. You know, we take decisions and then we make them good.
Yeah.
Right? So decisions are only about execution as well. Yeah. So a lot of times it's better to make a decision and correct it as you go than not. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times there's only a 5% of decisions that are really a problem if you don't make the mm-hmm. right one. Mm-hmm. The other ones we can correct a little bit along the way.
Yeah,
but you need people to be able to think things through and decide. And if you're going to create a good context, and if your people are going to, below you, leaders create a good context for them, they have to have the critical thinking to be able to analyze the situation in the right number of colors and then give the best context or guidance. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the people just can't see the world in colors. They think in black and white. And then it's either this or that. No. The world is so complex now, is you have to get the colors right.
Yeah. And it's not just gray, right?
It's not just gray, you know?
And or different shades of gray, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
How about, you worked with teams all over the world. Is there a particular culture or a particular type of leader or a particular industry where people are better at giving context, at creating that context, or is this an issue across all?
I think it's an issue across all the ones, mm-hmm. but I think the ones that have been getting better at it, the leader of Microsoft, the name escapes me now.
Nadella
created. Yeah. You know, he created a context of where we're going, what is the business going to be like, and he allowed everybody, and they're, like, really focused now. Mm. And so when you have such capabilities where you need to exploit it, they create a good context. I think Apple had a great context before. I'm a little bit uncertain if they have the road ahead as you know,
what's
we're
next?
Making a difference in the universe type of thing that they had before.
Yeah.
I think the static organizations, the ones that didn't have a change forced on them, or they don't have such capabilities that their business could be whatever they want it to be, they have a trouble of, really creating that.
Yeah. It's interesting the examples you've given, because obviously an organization like Microsoft, they pretty much can do anything, right? They could get involved into pretty much anything, really. They have the capability, they have the talent, they have the money, they have the reach, right? You know, pretty much everybody uses a Microsoft device at some point in their lives.
Yeah.
And I guess this brings me back to one of the points you made earlier, which is about, being very clear about the things you don't want to get involved in. And I think that's probably harder in these days where you have new things coming up every day, the new flavor of the month, the new AI of the month. What advice do you give to leaders like who need to navigate this, who need to ensure that, the company is moving forward, that at the same time that we're not missing anything, that is also that could have the impact in the business, so how do you do that? Like, how do you ensure that you move forward, they don't get distracted, but also you keep your eyes open to what is relevant outside of your business?
Well, I think, a lot of things we talked about, you can't be buried in your organization because you won't be aware of things, right? So you always have to be reading in different things, you always have to be meeting different people and creating your picture, refining and so forth. But you have to really understand and keep very clearly what you believe in. What is it you believe in that you can really achieve with this organization? And sometimes there'll be things coming in that will challenge your belief. And then you're going to have to revise it, right? Mm-hmm. But, if you stay focused on what you believe in and don't allow the noise to come in and affect that, then you stay right on the course. Mm-hmm. I was just the other day, it popped up in social media for Johnny Ive talking about Steve Jobs. He says Steve Jobs was the most focused person. And he was trying to be prepared for Steve because often Steve would come and say to him, what did you say no to this week?
He said, sometimes I had to prepare these sacrificial no's. He says, no, it's not what you say no on the things that just, it's what you say no on something that's really, really good, right? That I really love to do, but it's just not as important as where we're going. And so the thing I found, and we keep coming back to it, is where and why. If where and why is very strong on where we're going, then that's your always comparison. Is this helping me go faster or not? Or is I'm on the right direction? This new thing coming in is going to drastically change that. Mm-hmm. So now you have something, right? And so I think if you don't have a very strong where and you only have all these what's, then we're more challenged to which is the best of the what's, right? And is what my boss wants or what they want or they want what's easiest to do? And then if you only have what's, because you don't have the context of the where and the why.
And does that require a certain level of confidence as well?
Yeah.
Individual confidence, because obviously not everybody can come and get up to someone who's perhaps seen as a little bit more powerful, more influential inside the organization, and simply just say no to that person. Or, you know, we've seen many times, right? That person who comes, urgent email, or, you know, put big capital letters on the subject line of the email.
Yeah.
It will make a big noise around it, and then sometimes you just have to, okay, what am I gonna do?
Yeah.
You know, so to people like that, you know, perhaps they haven't built a big internal network or a big kind of persona or even influence inside the organization. How can people start being more selective about the things that they get involved in? And
whenever people come to them, you have to keep what's on your plate very clear. Mm-hmm. That's the only way you can quickly go and say, this might not be the case. You know, so you have to be very clear on your plate. Mm-hmm. But there's a character element that you have to have.
Absolutely. I mean,
you have to deliver to your what you say, right? So if you're known for, you know, I'll do this that by this date and you do it, it's easier for you to say no to others because you have a credibility of delivering, you know what it is and so forth. And so they take what you say. But if you're not good at delivering to dates, then you have no credibility to go and say, you know, I don't have time for this or this. So I found that the character trait of do equal say allows you to say, to have more confidence to say no and be very clear about what's on your plate.
Very, very interesting, Mark. I have one final point that which I wanted to cover with you, which is around looking at the HR, the L&D people in the organization, and those with the tools that to empower people, you know, to develop themselves and so on. What can they do? You know, of course, this is a podcast for HR leaders, for talent leaders and so on. What can they do to start planting this seed in the organization, you know, and first ensuring people can create better contexts, ensuring the leaders can do that, but also ensuring that people in general understand context or ask the right questions in order to understand that context. So what can they do to empower the organizations?
I mean, the two most important things I always found if you want to drive something through an organization is you have to have a very good communication and reminder strategy, right? You need to communicate out, you know, kind of expectations, what we want to achieve in these things. And you want to keep reminding people because if not, they're not going to have it. You know, people know who've done work with me, I have daily reminders go out via WhatsApp to previous groups I work with. I have maintaining now 45 of them that go out, reminders. So you got to remind them. But the key thing I found in any organization is you got to invest in your role models, right? I mean, when you got your first supervisor's job, did you really understand what a supervisor did? Probably not, right? I just copied what I saw above me. So what I found, if you want to change anything, the fastest way to adopt anything new or change it is understand who are your role models and invest in them. And get them, and sometimes I used to say to my role models, I really need you to role model this behavior. You're very good at it. We need to get better at it. We need to more people to adopt this. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, let's take an example. If you have a micromanager in an organization, the wrong role model, they're creating future micromanagers. So not only do you have a present problem, you have a future problem. Because they're learning that's what a leader does. Mm. And you wouldn't be amazed at the number of people in organizations, they say, oh, gosh, I wish my boss was hearing this. But, you know, I think what I found is people need to be reminded, right? That's why a training isn't as good as unless they're reminding it. Like when I do some programs, I have always, in every program, it's reflection and peer coaching. So peer coaching, partner up, help each other take action. And in some programs, I make them accountability partners. So every 3 weeks, they catch up, hold each other accountable for the actions. Mm. So it's,
and if you that, look. And is that effective from your perspective?
If you allow them to choose their partners.
Mm.
If you put the partners on them, no.
Really?
Yeah, because I always say, you pick a person in the room you want to work with. I mean, some who left over at the end. It's like at the football game or something, the chosen last or whatever.
Yeah.
But I found when you dictate it, your success rate goes down.
Very, very interesting.
It's like mentoring too.
Yeah.
If you line up mentors for people, if you ask them, pick a mentor, or you know, it's different. Mm. Yeah. But I think it's really, really important how we follow up and keep the message strong. Mm. You know, there was an old thing in the, what was it, when thinking about, do people really connect with you? How many instances on social media do they need, or interactions or email? And it's somewhere like 10 to 15 before, you know, a person really registers you. You know, they get this email, they got that Instagram, they got this, they got that, but they kind of need 10 to 15 of these before you're up on their radar at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like if they get their training and you talk to them once, that's not enough. You have to think about how do you keep it alive long enough that it affects their behavior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I always say, how do you keep something alive long enough so that people can make it a habit?
Very, very interesting, Mark. Could stay in this conversation for another couple of hours probably. I know you just mentioned, right, you know, being active on social and all, having all these touch points and reminders. I know you create a lot of content.
Yeah.
Where can people access that? What is the best way to connect with you for everybody listening?
Just link with me on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram and others. But I put out a lot of different things just as reminders of key things. Because, you know, it's like I was talking with people the other day. Training is like an activity,
mm-hmm.
or learning is an activity. The outcome of that is changing your thinking or changing your behavior. So I often try to keep things going out, because if people hear it, you know, many times in different things, at one time it'll click with the time they need it, and they take more action.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's my goal. My goal is, I mean, I love the engaging people in the training, but that's still an activity. Mm-hmm. The outcome is the other people, you know, either thinking differently, or, you know, taking different actions, creating a habit, mm-hmm. etc. So I'm always providing those reminders. And the power of the reminders, too, is that it's not just my action. I could be asking my people to do something similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been telling them a couple times, if I give them someone else telling it, sometimes they listen to someone else too. So I have a lot of leaders and CEOs who use some of my reminders and pass it on to their key people, because it's been something they've been telling them anyway too.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And you have a website as well, right, Mark?
Yeah, markfritzonline.com.
Markfritzonline.com. Excellent. Mark, thank you so much for coming here.
Pleasure.
This has been a very, very interesting conversation. I made a lot of notes. I will probably, and I hope, should take some of these points with me and change behavior, as you said. You know, I think that's important. And for everybody listening, thank you very much. If you enjoyed this conversation, please take a look on our website, headspringexecutive.com. There will be not just this podcast, but other conversations there with other professors, other experts, and we're building a collection of a lot of very interesting content. So thank you very much, everybody, and see you next time.